Hi, everyone. Welcome to Black Girl in CLE, the podcast. I am your host, Shayna Black, and in every episode, you'll meet some pretty cool people who are doing pretty cool things. So sit back and let's meet today's guest.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show. I am Shayna Black, your host, and today with me, our guest is Heidi Barham, the Manager of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion at the Hospice of the Western Reserve. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Shayna.
Did I get your last name right? Did I say it right?
You're good.
Did I do good? Okay. So first of all, welcome to the show. And as we talked before, we are dedicating February, part of March, to caregiving. And we're launching our caregiving season series. Part of this conversation is really thinking about people that care for other people, but also as we get older, knowing that we're going to probably need a caregiver. You know, hospice is a logical place. But I think, you know, like I said, I wanted to say a logical place to start, but I'm not sure that many people think that that's a place to start. They think it's the end. Just first of all, just tell me a little bit about what you do at Hospice of the Western Reserve.
Well, first of all, Shayna, thank you for having me. I am excited to be here to talk about caring and caregivers. And I'm reminded of something that former First Lady Rosalynn Carter said. There are only four types of people: those who are caregivers, those who have been a caregiver, those who will be a caregiver, and those who need a caregiver. And so caregiving is something that we inherently are going to find ourselves facing any day now, basically. Right. And so my work at Hospice of the Western Reserve, I am diligently working out in the community to share the word about what hospice care is, and more importantly, what hospice care is not, that people would come to understand that hospice is not a death sentence. Okay. It's not a place you just go to die. It's a level of care. It's a way for us to help you while you are facing life-limiting illness, or to help your family members to provide the care that they need.
So let's talk about that and start right there. The idea of hospice, I was always told that that's when you, I was told, or I believe somewhere, that that's when you call hospice, like you said, it's a last day. It's, there's nothing we can do. Good luck to you. Just enjoy them while you're here. And you're saying not necessarily. Like, when should people start thinking about hospice, or how do we get on that bandwagon a little earlier?
So a hospice level of care is deemed to be appropriate if the doctors are saying, all things being equal, we're looking at months versus years. And so if your doctor were to come to you and say, you know, we've exhausted the options for treatment and we're thinking you maybe have 6 months, that's when you call, not when it's those last 2 to 3 days and your loved one is writhing in pain and they're suffering, they're no longer able to have any enjoyment or quality of life. Calling hospice sooner rather than later gives us the opportunity to come in and provide those services that do promote dignity and quality as you approach the end of your life. And so we work with the families, we provide nursing care, nursing assistance, social work support, spiritual care support. We have art therapists, music therapists, pet therapists. We have special programs for veterans. There is a plethora of services and resources we can provide, to the extent that most people, once we get involved, they'll say, if we had only known that's what it was, we would have called you so much sooner.
Right.
So my goal is to help people know sooner rather than later what it is and how we can get those services to people.
And before you had said it's not necessarily a death sentence. So like maybe it is 6 months out. Is that, you know, I guess what does that look like for the person? You know, they're at home, or maybe there's a center, right? They can come be in hospice. What does that look like day to day for them?
So we provide hospice care wherever that patient is, wherever they call home. So we can come into a house, we can go into apartments, assisted living, independent living, nursing facility. We've cared for patients in settings you would not imagine, in hotels, okay, or in a car. We go where the patient is.
Wow.
So we have inpatient units. We have one at East 185th and Lakeshore, which is our David Simpson Hospice House. We have one in Westlake, which is our Ames Family Hospice House. We also have the Medina Inpatient Unit in Medina County, and we have another unit at Stein Hospice in Sandusky. But the majority of the care that we provide is in the patient's home. We come to you. And it's a level of care. It's not just a place that you go. So when, I like to say it's on that continuum of care, when a woman is ready to have a baby, she goes to the gynecologist, obstetrician. When the child is born, they go to the pediatrician. Mm-hmm. As you age, you go to primary care. And when right. you get even older, you start seeing maybe a gerontologist. And then it's the hospice level of care.
Okay.
Hospice care, however, can get involved at any stage in anyone's life if there is a life-limiting illness. So we even have a pediatrics team, okay. which very few hospices across the country have a dedicated pediatrics team. But we can get involved if the woman is still pregnant and the doctors determine that there's going to be limited life viability for that baby. We get involved then. And then we follow that family through after the birth of the child for however long they're still with us. So wherever, whatever stage a person is at in their life, hospice care can be an appropriate level of care. It's not just for seniors.
Okay. I think, you know, like the thought of pediatric level hospice, like, had not occurred to me. So thanks for clarifying that. And I'm just thinking about families that I know that might have needed that service at some point. For the caretaker, what can they expect? Because I, you know, sometimes some of us don't want folks all up in our house and they just come in to see and all of that. But it sounds like, you know, there's a little more dignity in leaving the person in the home. Absolutely. Like, what does that look like, or how does that support the caregiver having you there?
When we receive that phone call that a person is in need of hospice care, we will meet with the family and that patient to talk about the services that we provide.
Now, who calls you, the family or the hospital? Like, how do you get involved?
Absolutely good question. Anyone can start the referral process. Okay. The patient can call us. Their loved ones can call us. If they're in a hospital setting, the nurse, the unit manager, physician, we will take that first call from anyone to say, hey, we think this is an appropriate referral.
Okay.
We then have to have a doctor's order that says right. this is an appropriate level of care. But that first call, anyone can make it.
Okay.
And so when we come out, we'll meet with the family, we'll meet with the patient. And when I say family, it's how that patient defines family.
Okay.
It may be family of origin. It may be family of choice. It may be their best friend next door. It may be a buddy they've known forever.
Okay.
It's however they define family. And so we'll meet with them. We'll look at the patient's condition. We'll assess medical records and see what an individualized plan of care looks like for that patient. If they're in their home, we don't just walk into your house and take over. We always call ahead of time and schedule a time to come out to meet with you and the patient. So we'll come in, we have a nurse that's out at least once a week or more, depending on, you know, what the patient's circumstances are. Mm-hmm. We have nursing assistants that can assist with activities of daily living, showering, bathing, okay. those kinds of personal care. Mm-hmm. We have our social workers. We have our spiritual care. We also have volunteers who can come in and sit with a patient for a while. So if you need to get out and okay. go do some grocery shopping or go get your hair done or go to the barber shop, because we know what ends up happening is caregivers mm-hmm. often will go before the care receiver because they put themselves on hold because they're so focused on caring for their loved one that they don't take time to go to those doctor's appointments.
Can you say that again, please? Like, I heard you. I just think it needs to be said again.
We will oftentimes see the caregiver go before the care receiver because they're putting themselves on hold. They're not doing their follow-up doctor's appointments. They're not going to get their blood work. They're not going to get medications refilled. They're not doing just personal things for self-care, like
right.
going to get a massage or going to get their hair and nails done or going to the golf course or whatever it is that might be that release and right. outlet for them. There's a sense of guilt that I can't leave my loved one. Right. I got to be here.
Just in case.
Right. And so our volunteers can come in and sit for an hour or two just so you can even go take a walk around the block just to get a break. Because people don't realize caregiving is hard work.
Yeah.
And caring for your loved one in your home, you know, it sounds beautiful. It sounds fabulous. But if you're not prepared to do that, it can be a much greater challenge than anyone ever anticipated. And to even say, we're going to go out and hire help, we're going to set up a schedule and we're going to bring in mm-hmm. all this agency help to help us. Well, if they call off, guess what?
Right.
You're still there doing it.
Or other family, so-and-so's going to fly in and help me take care of granddad or
yeah.
kind of thing.
And we see that a lot where there's the in-town sibling taking care of mom or dad or whatever that family right. member is. And then the one flies in from out of town and they swoop
for the
in
weekend.
And they want to tell you all the things that you need to be doing, and then they go right back home. And you're still there in the midst of it all.
And that was your break.
Right. But we come in and we offer that support to help you, even as you're being the caregiver, to still be the daughter, still be the spouse, still be the sibling, still be that child. Because we get so focused on being caregiver, we don't think we have any other valid role to play.
Right. And I think in sometimes, you know, you're stretched because as the caregiver, you still have your own other family. If you're taking care of mom, you have children. Or if you're taking care of one child as a caregiver, maybe special needs, you have the other siblings, your spouse, and other obligations, work. And then, you know, it's just a hard time. It's a hard space.
It is.
As someone who's been through it, like, it's a very hard space to operate in.
And we don't prepare ourselves for that to happen.
Right.
You know, we take classes in school, and unless you have been deliberate in going into healthcare, you're not really prepared to be a caregiver.
At any time. At any time.
Like I said, it sounds a lot easier said than done. And then the reality hits at 2 o'clock in the morning. And let's say your loved one is dealing with dementia. They've got their days and nights mixed up. Yep. And they're not sleeping. And you're afraid they're going to get out of the house. And so you're not sleeping because you're following them around the house. Mm-hmm. And then you wear yourself out. And like I said, that's why we see caregivers often go before the receiver.
Okay. So thinking about this in the services, I know another time a lot of people are worried about the medical bills piling up. So sometimes I would assume people don't call you early because they're worried 6 months of hospice medical bills. Is there, like, does insurance cover hospice?
So there is a hospice benefit that is part of Medicare, Medicaid, and most private insurance. And it covers the expenses that are related to your terminal diagnosis. So if a patient's diagnosed with cancer, but they also have COPD or diabetes, hospice care will take care of everything related to that cancer diagnosis.
Okay.
And then everything else is covered the way it always has been. So if it was under your Medicare or your private insurance, it would still be covered that way. We are a not-for-profit organization. Mm-hmm. We know there are some for-profit organizations out there that are also doing the same work that we do. But we do everything we can to drive the care to the bedside so that that person is getting everything that they need. It may be durable medical equipment like a hospital bed or a bedside commode or an over-the-bed table, your oxygen tank. We also pay for your medications related to your terminal diagnosis. So pain medication, if you need, if you're dealing with shortness of breath related to your diagnosis, we will provide medications to cover that. We provide your personal care items. So if a person's incontinent, we'll provide incontinence care. We'll provide lotions and shower bathing products to help take care of your loved one. And so the goal is to try to make this journey the best that we can while you're going through it.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier, you know, that you had, you meet the patient where they are mainly. So hospital, I mean, hotel rooms, you've said, and cars. But some families choose to come to hospice, to your facility, correct?
So our inpatient units are not designed to be long-term placement. Primarily, it's for symptom control. So if a patient's at home, they're on our services, they're dealing with uncontrolled pain, or they're having breathing issues, the goal is for them to come into one of our units. We will help get everything settled for them so that they can ultimately return home.
Okay.
However, we know we're talking about end of life, so some patients aren't able to make that transition back home, and so they'll stay there in one of our units.
Okay.
But we will, we are always evaluating every day to see, is this an appropriate level of care? Is this really working for you? If you're at home, do we need to talk about moving into a unit for a short term? Once you've been there and it looks like things have leveled off, is it really feasible for you to go back home? Or do we need to start doing some discharge planning and looking at placement at a nursing facility or assisted living?
Okay.
And so our social workers help the families work through that.
Okay. I think, you know, the question I have is, we think about maybe not so much your dementia patients, but other patients that still have their cognitive abilities. Who mainly are you working with? Are you working with the families and kind of power of attorney people? Or are you talking to the patient regarding these decisions?
So the patient, as long as they have agency and can make decisions on their own, that's who we talk to.
Okay.
Because this is about you as the individual, as the patient. And our mission is to celebrate the individual worth of each life. And so we're doing everything we can on your behalf. Recognizing some people will then defer and say, mm-hmm. I don't want to make these decisions, talk to my kids, or I don't want to make these decisions, talk to my spouse. We are asking people to make sure they have their advanced care directives in place. So their durable power of attorney for health care, their living will, organ donation designation. So if the time comes that you can't speak for yourself, we have someone named that will speak on your behalf and that they will honor your wishes. If we don't have anything in writing, things can get complicated.
Okay.
For an individual, let's say they have four children.
Mm-hmm.
That means there are four opinions about what mom wants. And if we can't get all four of them of the same mind and of the same opinion, it could literally end up in a courtroom situation getting guardianship for someone to make those decisions. And when it's a critical time in someone's life, you want to spend that time with them at the bedside.
Right. And not arguing, just in general, exactly. For in front of mom or dad or over exactly. Mom and dad.
Exactly. One of the examples I use, sometimes we have family that we don't speak to.
Mm-hmm.
And if, for example, it's just you and your sibling and you all don't talk and you end up in a position where you cannot speak for yourself, they may end up reaching out to that sibling as your next of kin to make decisions on your behalf. Remember, you're right. Not talking to that person.
Right. Probably haven't talked to them in years.
And now they're your decision maker. So that's why we are always encouraging people to do advanced care directives. And that's anyone over the age of 18. And
right.
In good health, bad health. Yep. You should have these documents in place.
Yes, and I know a few, they call them, I guess, elder care attorneys, but just in general of having the documents in place. And they tell you that when your kids go to college, you know, because you want to make sure that they call you, but then you forget about it. You know, they're 25 until the time comes. You know, I think, you know, what you're saying in the directive place, I would say, I guess the question would be, and I know you're not an attorney, could someone say they wanted to be the neighbor or the friend? I think you mentioned earlier the family that you consider family. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
So you as the individual get to determine who you want to speak on your behalf. In fact, I heard one elder law attorney refer to it as, who is the person you trust to get your order right at Chipotle?
That's good.
Who is going to honor your wishes? I had someone tell me point blank, I want to be an organ donor. And this person said, well, I'm not giving your organs away. And my response was, well, you won't be my power of attorney for healthcare.
Right.
Because I need someone who's going to honor my wishes. And so you want to have that conversation up front with that person to say, are you okay being my advocate? Are you okay talking with doctors on my behalf that I don't want life support or I would want life support? Or if they've started, I want you to stop it. Or I do want a feeding tube. I don't want a feeding tube. There are a lot of decisions that may need to be made on your behalf. And you want to make sure you're picking that person that's going to speak for you.
And I think it's good to not have the person be surprised. So you said the sibling that maybe you haven't talked to in years. Absolutely. For whatever reason, and now they're like, oh, I didn't know that any of this. Because now, not to say it's another burden on them, but also they weren't thinking about this.
And they won't know what your wishes are.
Because they haven't known you, who you are now at this point or before.
And so we talk about courageous conversations. Mm-hmm. It's hard to have that conversation. There are a lot of, you know, older people that I'll speak to, they're like, oh, no, I tried to talk to my children. They just said they don't want to talk about it.
They don't want to know.
And we have a propensity to think if we talk about these things, we are inviting them to happen.
Yes.
But newsflash, even if we don't talk about them, they're still going to happen. So the question is, do you want to make preparation and have things in place so that when those things happen that we know will happen, everything's already taken care of? Or do you want your loved ones scrambling and scrounging, trying to figure out up from down, left from right in the middle of a crisis?
Yeah, like I went through a situation or know of a situation where the elder person like made plans with one person. And then the family didn't necessarily know. Like she told a neighbor or a niece or something like, hey, because the niece came over all the time or whatever it was. And the children came like, we're going to get this, we're going to take control and make sure they're getting older. And it, in some ways, it kind of becomes a hot mess. Because the one family member that was like, I'm the caregiver, which, you know, they should be the living nearby, I'll come by, feed them, was just like, let's throw away all this stuff, help start cleaning the house out, let's start decluttering and start, you know. But what I get was, the question I always wonder is, did they know that she told the other person this little pile of papers here was important? You know, because you can look at papers and be like, you don't need this, especially people that are in our declutter, get yourself, just throw these papers away. But you don't know what you're throwing away if you're not the person. So I think, you know, your point about having the conversation with who you told things to or whomever, because I remember that niece was just like, I got a key. And they couldn't understand, why do you have a key? Because the person said, hey, I want you to have a key, so that maybe they didn't trust somebody else in the family. Mm-hmm. And it's just a, you know, I just think that it's something that we don't think about. And I used to believe that thing about, we don't want to bring it to existence, so we can't like speak up on your passing.
Right. So it's important that when you do your documents, that you are keeping everything in either a lockbox or a safe deposit box, and your family knows where those documents are. One thing I would say, when you do a healthcare power of attorney and living will, you also want to make sure your physician has a copy. Your healthcare system, if you go to the clinic or UH or Metro, that they have a copy scanned into your records. More often than not now, if you're going in for a procedure, they're asking you for those documents. Okay. And if you don't already have them, they want you to fill them out right then and there.
Right.
And who wants to do that in a moment of
all the other stress
and anxiety and everything that's going on? So we encourage people, have that conversation when you are in a good frame of mind. Family's all coming over for Easter dinner. You know what? After dinner, we're going to sit around and have a conversation. These are my wishes. Here are my documents. This is where they will be kept. And then that way, everybody's hearing the same message at the same time. Mm-hmm. Now, they may not want to listen to it, but at least you can say, I have told everyone, and mm-hmm. everyone knows what I want.
Yeah, and I had heard even, you know, to keep it updated. Maybe you say it in 2024, but in 2035, family may have changed.
Absolutely. You know, if you're naming a spouse, mm-hmm. and the spouse's health condition has changed more dramatically than yours has, you absolutely want to update it.
Right.
Or you've picked one of your four children, and that child is now facing caring for their spouse or their children.
Right.
And may not be in the best frame of mind to be your healthcare power of attorney. So it always makes sense to continually, you know, just go back and revisit it.
Yeah, I mean, I even, like when I said I met the attorney, they were even saying, if you think about it, sometimes you had a power of attorney because your children were little. Mm-hmm. And so it was automatically your spouse. But now your children are adults. And so it's time to revisit as you go through different stages and changes of life, changing jobs or moving. Like, that's a great time to take that moment, right, and reflect on your paperwork.
And let's be realistic. The decisions you make at 30 or 40 when you're in great health and you think you're looking at another 40 or 50 years of life are going to be drastically different than when you're 60 or 70 and you've gotten a diagnosis that the doctors say, hey, you know, we found a spot.
Right.
Maybe I don't want the same things now that I would have wanted then.
That's true. That's true. So before we close, and I'm so glad you're here, and I hope you come back and we can continue this conversation, because I'm sure people will have more questions, and I'm sure I'll have more questions. Where do you think people need to know about hospice that you haven't said? Like, they're hearing this and they're thinking, like, what's the next step? We're not going to call you now to be like, I want to learn more. Or do we call and say, hey, I want to learn more?
Absolutely. We will do an information visit with the patient and family. If you aren't sure that you're ready for a hospice level of care, we also have a palliative care program that deals with more chronic illness. So you may still be seeking curative care, but you're dealing with some uncontrolled symptoms. Mm-hmm. We have a navigator program. It's called Western Reserve Navigator. Okay. That's staffed by nurse practitioners, social workers, and volunteers. And it's for those who are not yet ready for a hospice level of care.
Okay.
If you have questions, you can always reach out to us. We would much rather people call us and ask the questions now than sit back and wonder, is it time? Should I call? Well, if I call, are they going to think I'm, mm-hmm. you know,
trying to rush them along? Or
correct. And one thing about hospice, we do not, please hear me, whoever's listening, we do not hasten death. There is a misperception out there that once you call hospice, it means it's all over. It's those last two or three days, mm-hmm. and all they're going to do is give you a bunch of morphine and leave you in a corner to die. That is so not what we do. It is all about adding more life to whatever days you have. And so we have, like I said, a whole plethora of services and things to do to make your life better. So we have our moments to remember. So, you know, sometimes we'll have a patient who says, I always wanted to go to a Guardians game, or I always wanted to go to a Cavs game.
Wow.
And we can make that happen. We've had situations where one of the children was supposed to get married, but we don't think mom or dad is going to make it long enough for that wedding. We will bump up the wedding and bring the wedding to you so that you can take part in it.
Wow.
Or we had one gentleman not that long ago, grandpa wanted to go to the wedding, but because he was bedbound, they didn't think that was an option. We made it happen. He got to go to the wedding and see his granddaughter get married. I've actually performed weddings. I'm ordained clergy. I didn't just do it out of... I've done weddings at Hospice House because there is a couple, they've been together for 30 years. And, you know, we just keep going, treating life as usual. And if it ain't broke,
don't fix it. It's my special person.
Yep. Right.
We don't need a title.
Exactly. But then as we get closer and it's like, you know what? This is the one thing we never did. We can make that happen.
That's great.
We also, we have so many things I could be here all day talking about, but like I said, the sooner we can get involved, the better.
And I think that's the important part that, you know, I didn't realize. And even though we've talked before to set this up and then talking today, like I'm still learning more about hospice to realize in some cases when I was caregiver, like, wow, we missed a moment or missed an opportunity because we didn't know. And even the, like you said about the weddings or flying the patient who was bedbound, because like I've seen that in other care circles. And the caregiver probably needed the support trying to get the person to the wedding. And no one would have thought at that point there were services. It's just, I think as caregivers, we're just taking care of mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, auntie, neighbor, lady, or whatever. And, you know, I think that's the thing that what I'm learning, and I would guess other people didn't know that there's more to it besides, like, we're just coming, checking your pulse, and saying, make sure you eat something, Mr. So-and-so, and then going on our way.
Absolutely. It is, when we have the opportunity to do all that we can do, it creates an experience for our patients and their loved ones that is, there's no way to quantify it. It is just an amazing opportunity to spend with that patient and that family to say those I love yous, the thank yous, the I'm sorrys, the I forgive yous. To have those moments and have somebody encourage you that, you know, it's important to say these things, so let's do them. One other thing I want to leave with you. We don't just stop at the end of that patient's life. We follow that family for 13 months out to provide bereavement services. And so that gets you through that first set of birthdays, anniversaries, holidays, all those moments that just may.
And the day of passing.
Absolutely. And we do one-on-one counseling. We have group support. We have special bereavement camp for children during the summer because, you know, children, they grieve differently than adults and helping them to walk through that process. So there, like I said, there's just so much. I could be here all day and tell you about
it. It sounds like, you know, it's really, they talk about like wraparound services in school, but really to wrap around that family.
Absolutely.
Because that's important. And I don't think people think about that as much. You know, I just read a book and they were saying you get so much time off from work and then you're supposed to just get back to it. And like, yeah, we know you miss her, but work's calling and you got bills to pay. And then all the other stuff that's left behind after that person, like settling their home or clothes, whatever that is. So I think, you know, that's never heard that. And I just think that that's an amazing service because it is important to people. If people haven't gone through hospice of Western Reserve, but maybe they recently lost a loved one, can they still engage with you for that, or they have to go a different route now because the person's already passed away?
Well, we do have some community groups, and we have these amazing healing arts workshops. There's something about art that speaks to someone's spirit. So we have a number of community groups that are available, some in person, some virtual.
Okay. Awesome. Well, we're running out of time, but I am so grateful for you to come. I hope you come back and talk to us some more about Hospice of the Western Reserve and other programs like that for caregivers, because like I always just say, you never know. No one plans to be the caregiver, although we know it might happen until you're, and then when you're in it, you're in it.
Absolutely.
You know? So again, thank you for your time. My guest today is Heidi Barham, the Manager of Director of Inclusion and Equity at the Hospice of the Western Reserve. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thanks, Shana.
Have a great day, everyone. Talk to you next time.